Ah, je vois Adrien Simon qui se connecte. Ça, c'est un ancien étudiant, un ancien doctorant à moi. C'est chouette.
OK. So good morning everybody. It's my pleasure to welcome today Étienne de Rocquigny. Étienne de Rocquigny will introduce himself as a scientist and innovative entrepreneur. We are colleagues, but also friends. We usually share time on stage because we are both jazz players, fond of jazz people. We are with today around Étienne to listen to him. Students from the master course Machine Learning, Computer Science Department of Galatasaray University. Nathalie Deprat, who is there, French professor of philosophy, shareholder of the Galatasaray Chair Phenomenology of Deep Learning in Artificial Intelligence, a share sponsored by Airtice Company and the French Embassy. We are also waiting for, I admit, other people. Philippe Alcaraz, the CEO of the Airtas company, involved into the chair scientific program. But there are also many other guests, students, scientists, professionals, colleagues, and friends. So we are very happy to listen to Étienne de Rocquigny this morning. It's an informal, of course, exchange. Étienne will present his view on the common goods at the risk of algorithms, what to do with artificial intelligence. We shall listen to him, then ask him questions and discuss if we want. So welcome everybody, and thanks very much to Étienne, I mean, accepting to be with us this morning, this early morning, after his running in the forest. So thank you very much, Étienne.
Thank you, Francis. It's a great pleasure for me to discuss about these dense issues. So I have to say that I have an important meeting at 11. So we have a bit less than 2 hours. I suppose it will be a good start. So let me share now the my presentation. Where is it? Blah blah blah. Écran partagé. Okay, Francis, can you allow me to share my screen?
This I don't know. How can I do it? Okay, I'm trying to do it.
Okay, so I
is it okay? No?
not yet, not yet. I'm not allowed to share the
Okay.
screen, so waiting for that authorization. I have to say that my talk would be more from a practitioner point of view, although I'm a former scientist. The presentation is more from a practitioner and entrepreneurial point of view than it is not a course of philosophy or ethics. It's more it's a, as I maybe I can start because I cannot share my screen. So who am I used to be a scientist, professor, dean of research at École Centrale Paris in applied math. My research subject used to be modeling under uncertainty. And for about 10 years, I have set up a company, the purpose of which is to develop algorithmic businesses. My company is actually founder, co-founder, or partner, or investor in about 20 algorithmic companies in many different sectors, ranging from the fintech, geotechnics, agriculture, accounting, social networks, so many different areas. The common feature being that there is a lot of value to be created with algorithm, and it's of course a point of view of a fruitful ventures that we're trying to set up. So it's usually small companies. The largest companies in which I'm involved is about 60 million euros, but usually it's more startups or scale-ups. So now the second, I can still not share my screen.
I don't know why. So maybe I'm looking for it, but Etienne, could you please maybe share your folder so that I will share your...
You can take what I sent you yesterday night.
Okay.
The PDF I sent you yesterday night, so maybe if you can just... as a professional, as I said, I'm now an entrepreneur in the algorithmic businesses. But there's a second identity under which I would be speaking this morning, is I'm also the founder of a think tank, a French think tank. It's a non-profit association, which is gathering around the issue of algorithm, not only entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, but also, and mathematicians, but also philosophers and even theologians. And the particular point of view of this think tank, which is called Espérance et Algorithme in French, you could translate with hope and algorithm, or you could translate it with expectation and algorithm. It's in French, it's the same word, and it's a play of words between the two meanings of espérance, hope, and expectation. And so the particular point of view of this think tank is that we also work under the biblical anthropology, which is a common treasure between Christian and Jews. So although this association is open to anyone, any kind of religion, but we take the particular point of view of the tradition, the anthropological tradition of the Bible. And inside the association, we have also Christian and Jews experts of theology and philosophy. So the purpose of that think tank is actually to foster the common good, meaning we try to discern to what extent and under which condition using AI and algorithm can be to a large sense pursuing the common good, and that's the topic of my talk, is what can we see as a search for the common good, and how algorithm can be an opportunity and rather than a risk in the search of the common good. And maybe
can
next.
Can you see your screen, Etienne? Not yet.
Yes, I can see it.
Okay. Is it okay?
Yes, full screen.
Okay, I will manage full screen. Okay. Okay.
And maybe go down to the second second slide.
Okay. Okay, this one maybe.
Right. So here, okay, I've already described who I am, and I have some books to search further into the subject. Now there is this blue. It's actually a white paper, but it's blue, so it's a blue white paper, and it's in French. But this white paper is actually was we published it last year, and it's Entreprendre à l'ère des algorithmes pour servir sans asservir, meaning how to be an entrepreneur in order to serve and not to alors asservir in English, I'm not sure, enslave maybe, in order to serve without enslaving the human person. So in that book, although it's in French, you have a lot of testimony of entrepreneurs who have tried to adjust the AI to the common good, and also different bibliography on many books about ethics, philosophy, and theology of artificial intelligence. And then more a mathematical point of view, I have a book, a reference book published under Wiley, many things about managing uncertainty with the algorithm. Right, maybe third slide.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got even problem to. Okay. Well,
so maybe a few words about algorithm, although I understand that most of you are already professionals or students of this domain, so I'll go very fast, but insisting on how it, why it's so important in economic and social perspective. And then I will argue for the need of algorithmic betting in the sense of Pascal's wager, meaning that it's you can see the AI as a human bet, and I would argue that this bet is worth for to actually to try, and then of course under a certain kind of discernment, looking for conditions that could ensure the balance of algorithmic services in the sense how those algorithmic services can serve without enslaving the human person. And of course, the real world into which we are is a world of tensions, and there is no such ethical paradise. Ethics is a matter of handling tensions between different kinds of goods. And of course, the question is to find creative compromises between different kinds of tensions. And maybe a few words at the end about employment and AI, which is quite an important issue for the common good and for the general public. Fourth slide. Right, so whenever you start speaking about the algorithm, of course, the general opinion would then mention many kind of evils, right? Are we going to see the disappearance of work? Are those machines going to take care of all what we do? Are we going into a world of surveillance, of mass surveillance, the kind of which George Orwell described in 1984? Are we maybe already in under surveillance, mass surveillance? Are those algorithms a risk or a force to actually increase discriminations and all kinds of injustice? To what extent are we undergoing filtering bubbles, meaning that with algorithm, we closely will only be informed about what we actually, the kind of people we are, and we get the information tailored to what we are, and then we enter a filtering bubble. So all these kind of evil that have generated a number of books, including, I've just shown the Black Box Society, a book 5 years ago, I think, but there are many others, which would take a very critical stance on the relation between algorithms and the future of society. Now, next slide. Why is this so so important and so pervasive? Now, maybe the first thing to actually realize is that those models, data, algorithm, and now we speak about AI, have invading the entire economy. And to be honest, it's not exceptional in history. If you look back in history, you can see that the quantitative reasoning and the modeling approach is a very old feature, which has been disrupting societies for a very long time. At the left hand of this slide, you have those Babylonian tablets, and where you have the first trace of an algorithm for extracting a square root. And you can imagine that at the time of Babylon, where the economy was 95% agricultural, and the resources of the state of that time was actually all into collecting tax according to geometry and to hectares of cultivated agriculture. The fact that we have some better methods to compute the surface would certainly have disrupted many jobs of that time of those people who were collecting taxes. And then if you look further into history, of course, it's because of algorithm in astronomy and navigation that the great discoveries of the 15th century have changed completely, have disrupted the course of international trade with the conquest of the new continents by the Europeans. So the economy was profoundly disrupted by those, and at the root of this, you have essentially algorithm to actually know where you are on the earth. And then further, and of course, in the 20th century, none of the big revolutions regarding industry and services could have occurred without computation. And now we have here the telecoms, and then the issue of the airplane industry, and all those industry have developed. Of course, we could speak about the nuclear energy and many kind of innovation that were allowed by computation, modeling computations. And then, of course, since the 1990s and year 2000, internet and all kind of digital services have invaded the entire economy. And myself, one of the projects of my venture, of my company, is actually going into the poorest place on Earth, sub-Saharan Africa, where digital payments and predictive maintenance is now disrupting the issue of water supply in places where you have the poorest people on Earth, and even places without network, actually without network, without GPS, and still algorithm can be used to actually help predictive maintenance on those human run water supply wells. So the extent of the algorithmic revolution is really ubiquitous. Wherever you're on Earth and whatever the level of rich or poor people, we are all invaded by this by those means for a long time. Next slide. And maybe it's worth understanding, not just on technological issues, but also on the microeconomy, why those algorithms are so pervasive. Well, one way to understand that is that this kind of cycle, meaning that we start to analyze with a data collection and go into understanding of a process. And once you've understood it, you're able to optimize it with numbers, and then to actually control it. and actually to automate and starting from this to learn from the automation, this kind of a circle, which is very familiar to IT people, is actually applicable to any kind of function of a company. And gradually, that's why B2B and B2C services have been so much changed by the algorithm, is that virtually any function, virtually any job can be impacted by those universal digital machines. Meaning that as an entrepreneur, and that's my job, and I work in sectors where automation is quite recent, for example, agriculture, which until recently was not automated at all. I actually experiment this on very to the everyday example, is that every kind of function of every company can be automated to a certain extent, and of course this this generates a level of competition and a level of disruption in the economy, which is very exceptional in history. Although it's already taken place, for example, with the advent of electricity at the end of the 19th century, electricity was not so pervasive as is the case of digital machines. Next slide. And of course, when you look into the economics of this disruption, and that's the most important for an entrepreneur, is that you have this kind of economies of scales and scalability, meaning that, of course, when you're going into modeling and then automation, you have a disconnection between the speed of growth of the turnover and the speed of growth of the operating expenses, meaning that in the traditional economy, getting 10% more clients means roughly 10% more costs. While the processes are still human, and of course, once you've digitized, automated, modeled, and predicted many things, then you can go into 10% more sales with only maybe 1% more operating expenses. I mean, if you listen to, and I'm sorry, it's in French. If you listen to Jeff Bezos would tell you that at Amazon. Amazon is seen as just a gigantic algorithm, and everything in Amazon, starting from the front office, the relation with the clients, into the back office, the actual logistics, into the human resource, and every process in Amazon is actually modeled. You have data and automation through algorithm, and Jeff Bezos used to say also that some of his competitors would spend fortunes in advertising while he would recruit engineers and mathematicians. Now it's a bit, of course, it's a bit of an exaggeration, and Amazon does a lot of advertising, but it's in a sense it's very important. Understanding that those universal machines based on algorithm allow a level of automation and customization, which is leading, of course, to a situation of natural monopolies. And natural monopoly, of course, is a very big challenge to the common good. And it's one of the, we'll go more into that, is one of the big risks here is are we still able to pursue the common good when we have such trends into economic facts leading, of course, to monopolies and leading to hubris and leading to temptation by a restricted number of people to actually define everything for everyone else. Now, of course, the big counterpart of this issue of monopolies is those economics of rising rates of profitability are also a resource for competitors, And it's one should never neglect the power of competition. And as an entrepreneur myself, I can see that although today's economy is marked by monopolies, those monopolies have a number of years of monopoly, which is very weak as compared to the monopolies in the history. And there's a large space. This could be debated, of course, but there's a large space to competition. So you can see, and that's the point of view of my think tank, is you could see algorithm as a tool to increase actually competition, not just as a feature leading to natural monopolies. Now, next slide. So what should we do? Knowing that we have algorithm everywhere, there are many risks, and there is the trend of monopolies. Next slide. Now, okay, so if I take the point of view of this think tank, and if I look into the Holy Scriptures, at least for Christians and Jews, and I read what is written in the Deuteronomy, one of the books of the early Bible. Now, the issue for the human being is actually to make decisions, and to make decision, the cardinal decision is to choose between life and death. And actually, according to that scripture, God is actually taking heaven and earth as a witness against us, meaning that it's not just that we can choose, but it's a moral duty, is a spiritual duty to actually choose between life and death. It's a calling coming from the deepest of our vocation. Is we are here on earth to make actually decisions. And of course, then the question is, choose life, and then you will be happy. And then if I go into Blaise Pascal, which we like to see as a triple godfather of our association, because Blaise Pascal, of course, was one of the great founders of the theory of probability, which is, as you know, a big paradigm for artificial intelligence, is for modeling, for modern modeling. But not only was he a co-founder of probability, he was also, of course, a great specialist, philosopher and specialist of the Bible. And he wrote through the Pensée de Pascal a big piece of literature and of philosophy. But also, so not everyone knows that Blaise Pascal was a very fruitful entrepreneur, and I see him as the first algorithmic entrepreneur. And as every entrepreneur, he started with a bad business, with a non-scalable business, and then he learned. So his first business was actually to set his machine, the Pascaline, which was, as you may know, this mechanical machine to actually compute arithmetics. And that proved